Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Sight Side, the podcast where we discuss applied neurodivergence in the workplace and in life. My name is James Hickey. I am an ADHD, that's autism and ADHD professional, and your host. Today, I've got a guest I've been looking forward to having on for quite some time. James Adams is the founder and CEO of Revolution Trucking, a certified disability-owned business he started in 2019 after more than 3 decades in supply chain, logistics, and transportation. Revolution runs in the mission-critical, no-fail space, the high-value, high-risk freight most carriers won't touch. And it's built around a philosophy you don't hear much in this industry, that the people moving the freight are partners and not numbers. Jim and I connected as fellow Ohio-based Dobies, and the moment we started talking, it was clear this was going to be a good one. We get into what neurodivergence actually looks like inside logistics, why the work rewards the kind of mind a lot of workplaces will filter out, and some stories from inside his own company that land right at the heart of what this show is all about. Jim, I want to thank you so much for coming on. Why don't you jump in and tell everyone a little bit about your background and how you got here?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question because I have to remind myself. So started out with a real interest in engineering. And so went to school for my mechanical engineering degree, ended up doing product development, which for a Fortune 500 company, it required knowledge of just supply chains, logistics, transportation, you know, getting products to the right places, getting the suppliers to get us the materials we needed. And then I went back to school and ultimately went into consulting. So I was doing consulting for large companies around supply chain management. An opportunity came to me around 2005 from a private equity company that had just acquired a trucking company in Ohio called Panther. And they were about a $50 million company at the time. And they wanted to grow and go public in 3 years. 2008 happened. We all remember that. The financial distress globally. We continued growing the company. We got the fleet size to about 1,800 assets. It was an asset-light model, so there are a lot of owner-operators. I think at our peak, it's probably 2,300 owner-operators. And eventually sold it to a strategic buyer, ArcBest. A lot of people know ABF as an LTL provider, but they were union-based, so they wanted scalability around an independent contractor model. And then from there, went into global logistics for a company out of New York City. We had operations in about 90 countries, but wasn't totally satisfied. And I said, you know what, I'm going to get the team back together. So I moved back to Ohio and picked out the really strong performers and started Revolution in 2019. So of course, the COVID hit soon thereafter. It was a difficult time, but also some blessings along the way. And so we've grown the company probably 30-35% a year every year. And right now we have, there's three independent companies, although we work together. There's Revolution Trucking, which is our asset side, Revolution Transport, traditional brokerage, Revolution Supply Chain, which is more of a digital interface for our customers, just book shipments. So that's how I got here.
That's quite a journey. I want to dive into a little bit about what was your threshold moment when you finally decided, because I know you started Revolution in 2019. And I love the idea you got find all the best people you worked with, you know, get the band back together, right? Get the team set up. But what was that threshold that made you really say, you know, this is, you know, enough's enough. I want to build this myself.
Yeah, there was two factors. One was the customer. How we interface with the customer, not taking them for granted. So we wanted to build an offering around mission critical services with high touch relationships, communications with the customer. So kind of we wanted to live in this no fail environment. And so that's why we named it Revolution, is to really change the way the industry operates.
Excellent. So I understand you and Brian, you had worked together for about 15 years before you launched. What did both of you see that you felt the rest of the industry was missing?
Yeah, well, originally we looked at the customers that we had years past, and we understood that the providers, it was so transactional and it was about money. And it really wasn't about building a better future together. So there was very little collaboration. I think a lot of people were taking the customer relationship for granted. I always say to our employees today, my name might be on your paycheck, but we can thank the customers because they're the ones that pay all of our paychecks. So that was really it, is I think recognizing that from a people, process, technology standpoint, we could develop a better offering for our customers and let them sleep better at night.
Right. I think that's, obviously customer service is huge, especially when it comes to trucking. It's a lot of, it's a big pie and there's a lot of fingers that are in it. You have the customer, you have the ship, you have the shipper, receiver, the brokers, you have all these, it's a lot of moving parts. And I love that you were able to distill that down to, okay, well, this is actually where our revenue comes from. So this is where, gratitude's going to happen.
Well, yes, not only are there a lot of different entities, a lot of different people, any given shipment, you can have 10 to 20 people involved from start to finish. So that the communication has to be super clear. And particularly, we operate in the premium space, which is kind of this all eyes, hair on fire. And, people think of expedite as just time, the fastest from A to B. It's really a lot more than that. It's looking at high risk moves. It's looking at, those type of shipments that might have executive visibility, could be a new big customer. There's a lot of reasons to get into that kind of no-fail environment, and being able to kind of ensure that all the people have the right information at the right time. That doesn't mean everyone has all the information, but for you to get success in a very short window requires a lot of, it has to be transparent.
Absolutely. I noticed, like, because I was on the road for several years as a driver. And one of the things that would frustrate me on the front line was the game of telephone that would have to happen. Like, I would, honestly, the best thing that would help me as a driver would be to call and have a 2-minute phone conversation with the guy on the tow motor unloading my truck. That's all I wanted to do. Talk to someone in the warehouse just for 2 minutes. Instead, I would have to call my dispatch, who would have to call the broker, who would have to call the shipper, who would have to wait for an email to come back. So you would insert all of these extra steps, and it was so much latency in the process. And I wanted to ask you about this. Like, when you were in a, you have a hot load, you have something that needs to be expedited, it needs to be, it was supposed to be in Laredo 3 days ago, and they're behind the eight ball, and they call up Revolution. They're like, look, you need to get us here. What steps do you take to eliminate latency in that process?
Yeah, so part of it is our data stack. People like saying tech stack, but I say data stack. And what... So we made an investment probably 5 years ago so that our customers would essentially see what we see. And so they would have their own unique logins, everything but the profit margin, basically. And it doesn't matter who the stakeholder is on their time. We do 40% of our business is going to job sites. So, large commercial construction, things like that. And you can imagine the chaos. I think we're working on three large data centers right now around the country. There's a lot of different stakeholders. And to avoid this, like you said, telephone and Chinese whispers, it's we serve up to you whatever you need. So, and in addition to that, we also send, sometimes it's third parties, we don't even know who they are, and we can send them a link. Whether it's via email or their phone, so that they can see what they need to see at any given time. So the updates and the alerts are semi-automated, and they always know they can call us. So depending on the customer and depending on the need, they can log into the system and have full visibility to what we're doing at any given time, including the driver. And, a big part of this is the driver. And the way we recruit drivers, we're very proud of, because they're part of the team. They're not just a number. They're not just someone, you know, they don't live on an island. They're part of the team. So being inclusive for the drivers is a key element, because at the end of the day, they're the tip of the spear in terms of this being a successful move. So that, again, back to that transparency, visibility, communication, but also allowing self-service. You know, when people want the information, they know they can go and find it, all the way to accounting, the accounting people at our customers. So that's a huge element of, I think, of our success.
That's amazing. So all right. So let me ask you this. Okay. So you guys started in 2019. So when, about 7 years, six and a half, mm-hmm. 7 years, give or take, what's one thing that you know today that you wish you had known 7 years ago? Like, if you could go back to Jim from 7 years ago, what's one piece of advice you would have given to yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, how do you de-risk a business? And it all comes around flexibility. And so we tend not to hardwire, even though we're ISO certified, we have our processes. You know, 90% of things go right every time. It's like clockwork. It's that 10%. And so we built scale into our business, which we're very proud of, but did we build flexibility into our business if this happens? So one of the things we did a few years ago is develop a risk management kind of steering committee, and we meet monthly to discuss the past, present, and future in terms of risk. So the more we can de-risk our offering, I think the more flexible we can be. And you know, I would say if I was going to give you a simple answer, though, it would be no one to say no. And that doesn't mean we don't want to do it. It doesn't mean we can't make money doing it. It really means that we might not be the best solution. So, you know, that's probably a short answer, is just no one to say no.
Absolutely. And that's one of those things that I guess would come with wisdom too. Like, you can't really know what the start versus what is, you know, what's worth it and what's not.
Well, I think, you know, part of it is, we've created a brand that we're very proud of, and sometimes you get greedy and you want to take on things that are not consistent with the brand and culture we've built. And so the quicker we can say no, and we do that through even existing clients. And when we say no, what we do is we do offer, you know, we'll introduce them to folks over here that might be better positioned, or we recommend a different solution that they could do themselves. So we give them options. We just don't slam the door in their face. But we go, you know what, for this path, we think this is the right way to go.
Well, let me ask you this. When it gets, you know, I understand you guys have been in a state of extreme, you know, very, very prosperous. You mentioned that you grow 30% a year. And that's some amazing, you know, upward momentum. I mean, it's always good to be in a, you know, state of abundance with that. Let me ask you this though, Jim, what keeps you in it on hard days?
Yeah, I love that question, because you have to remind yourself, first of all, if you're not having fun, why are we doing it? This business, as you know very well, James, is it's different every day, every shipment, every customer. So I think the unique aspect of it, you know, one of the things I've tried to do since day one is remove the mundane elements from the business, because it becomes very taxing over time for people to just be doing the same thing and getting frustrated and bored. So, you know, when a new person comes on into the company, you know, we want to train them in a lot of different elements, because one of the things, they might be interested in a specific position and then realize that their passion lies somewhere else. So we try and match the company needs with personal wants and keep it interesting and exciting. So, you know, we push people that, you know, let's give an extreme example of our accounting team getting into sales. So they will go to conferences. They will meet with clients to keep them, you know, one, to keep them in the loop on how things work outside their specific functional requirements. So to keep it interesting, but also to get a better appreciation and awareness of what other folks are working on.
Right. Well, I mean, that's good for overall cohesiveness too. And anyone who comes in right. who maybe not, because everyone comes into a company, they're always looking for that upward mobility. But I love that you provide an avenue for a lateral movement too. Because someone might be, you know, they might be in a position, and if they want to move up to like, you know, leadership or management, they're still working in a division that might not, you know, sing to their heart. You know, like you said, it's not fun, their passion's not in it. So I love the concept of, you know, lateral movement, being able to jump from one to the other.
And one of the things, James, is I have always been a big believer, probably because I was put in that position, is to give young people a lot of responsibility, not so that they fail, because we got the guardrails and there are other people that can help, but to give them more than they thought they were able to do, because they always surprise themselves. So that's another way, is to, you know, keep them growing, keep them learning. And so through, you know, giving them more responsibility, they get a chance to prove themselves.
Absolutely. I love that too. I mean, because you're right. You want to, maybe not bend to the point or be, break someone out of a comfort zone, give them more than they could chew on, but they need something to, stretch a little bit.
And the counter to that too, James, is so every, you know, regardless of tenure experience, we treat everyone the same. I even hate the word employees, they're partners. And, so one of the things we try and provide everyone a level of consistency so that things are fair. So for example, every person has the same number of PTO days. Everyone starts with 20 days each year. And we offer 2 days of flex time where they can work from home every month. So, you know, we provide, because, you know, quality of life, no one is going to burn out at our company, right? Someone is there to help, but you also need to ensure that they have some time to themselves, and we're offering them the flexibility so they can get things done. So that if you're going to ask, you got to give.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I want to pivot a little bit I want to talk about neurodivergence specifically in logistics. Sure. And how, the Revolution Trucking approaches to this. For me personally, I'm autistic, ADHD, I'm autism spectrum level 1 and ADHD. And it took me a while to find, trucking. And it was my unicorn profession. And what's funny is I got into trucking before I had even gotten a formal diagnosis. So my work history before that was all over the place, because it's like, my many late diagnosed adults who had been struggling with life. You know, I consider it that we're survivors of life is undiagnosed, because it's brutal out there, especially when you don't understand your own cognition and you don't understand why you don't really fit in anywhere. I could say with certainty, though, trucking was a unicorn profession because it is kind of the island of misfit toys. Like, you go in and it's one thing I loved after getting a CDL and getting a year experience was the job security and just ability to choose. Because it doesn't matter. It's one of the few industries where you can walk in and no one cares if you worked for a company for 2 months. All they care about is that MVR. They're like, well, show me the MVR. What do you, if you were safe, you're on board, welcome to the team. And it was having that degree of freedom where I wasn't necessarily pigeonholed into company culture or, having to watch what I said to people. And it was not from a perspective of being, vulgar or disrespectful or anything. It's just, as someone with autism, I struggle with, sociability sometimes. And in a company setting, it's difficult when you're in those soft moments, like not necessarily with a front facing, technical aspect of the job itself. But I mean, like in the break room or in the parking lot before and after work, and having these, unscripted social situations where it would, people with neurodivergence will sometimes default to things like info dumping or, other forms of social awkwardness that neurotypicals can't necessarily jive with very well. So that's why trucking was a unicorn profession for me, because you have the, all of the DOT standards. You know, you have all the safety standards, you have everything with the pre-trips, everything has to be technically perfect on a truck and, you know, safe to be able to get the load to where it has to go. I used to love trip planning. That was one of my favorites. Like I would love, especially when I was working with companies that would do LTL, because it's like multiple stops and I would have to plan out my week. I'd start in Cleveland and I would have like six stops in Texas. And then I would have to be in Laredo by like, you know, Tuesday at 4 p.m. for a pickup appointment. So it's like a lot of very strict timetables, and the autistic side of my brain absolutely loves that. On the other hand, with, you know, ADHD, it is fantastic to wake up in a different state every day. To be in a sense of, you know, and I've been in some, you know, real high stress situations where, you know, I'm in, you know, Houston trying to get over seven lanes of traffic to get off at a, you know, to get off at a thing. So I'm like, you know, doing the math in my head. I'm like, all right, I got, you know, 3/4 of a mile to get seven lanes that way, in heavy traffic. And it's like, you know, it's a real, we kind of joke around about that pucker factor, you know, where you're like really high stress. And it's one of those things where like any, you know, one wrong move, can cause a bit, you know, cause a catastrophe. But those are the situations that my ADHD side would thrive in. And unfortunately, not everything's like that, especially a long haul. A lot of it is just, you know, cruise control, open road, you know, you're just in like Illinois, you know, on 57, just like, you know, there's nothing around and you're just kind of, you know, listening to audiobooks and staring out the window. But that's kind of, you know, those are the times to let your brain breathe a little bit too. But it's, you know, neurodivergence in general seems to thrive in trucking and logistics. It's just one of those things that seems to cater to our brains. So let me ask you, as someone who's built a company with, you know, with these people in mind, does any of that ring true for you?
Yeah. So first things first, you know, we value the individual, and there is a very good understanding within the company that everyone's unique. And a lot of things, like you mentioned, James, you know, you're not aware of. You know, I use the example of, you know, it's real obvious if someone's in a wheelchair and they can't walk, but that's a small percentage of the total people that have some form of, and I don't even like to call it disability, but, you know, these hidden factors. So I said, you know, because we don't know, and I'll get to the drivers in a second, we need to be accommodating. So one of the things we've done over the last year or so, and every new employee goes through it, is understanding, having an appreciation for the individual. We learn differently. We hear differently. We react differently. We all come with our own experiences. You know, we're all on the spectrum somewhere. Right. Some are more extreme than others. Some are obvious and some aren't. And so I think that you got to start with the appreciation. Now, as you pivot to the driver, you know, because they are truly the lifeblood, you know, unfortunately in the industry, people that aren't in the industry have a very low appreciation for the demands of driving a truck. And I always relate it to a pilot, where 99% you might be bored out of your mind and 1% is terrifying and complete chaos. And you don't necessarily know when that's going to happen. So, you know, we always feel, and our drivers are over the road, so they tend to be gone, you know, on the low side a week, on the high side months, where they're living on the road. And, you know, the difficulty and it is a quality of life issue, right? It takes a special person that can even sign up for that. And most people, if they don't have experience doing that, they wash out very quickly because they see the dollars associated with that life, but that doesn't mean they can do it. And so we try and vet that out fairly early because, you know, turnover is it's a strain on the system. I think we have very good people that do driver recruiting and you know, driver retention. But in reality, you need to treat them, they're business owners, right? So whether they're an employee or not, they're business owners. And, you know, we spent a lot of time having a pathway. So we call it the driver journey, where they might drive in one of our trucks. We'll help them set up to buy one of their own trucks. Maybe if they're unregulated and they want to get their CDL, we support that. So you have to provide a pathway. If again, the relationship comes purely transactional, then you've removed the human element. So now back to your point on some of the neurodivergent. Some of our highest performing people have certain tendencies. One of my top sales guys is dyslexic, and I didn't know that. And at one point he came to me because I was like, and I was seeing these proposals, and I said, hey, you're proofreading these, right? And he kind of came clean. And yeah, I was like, you know, thank you for sharing that with me, because you know, now we can work together. Then on the opposite side, the driver, you can imagine how many numbers and letters we have a driver that's dyslexic, and the amount of communications and documents, and you know, whether it's the bill of lading, the proof of delivery, all of this stuff, it's a challenge. Yeah, I can tell you some of these people struggled their entire life, and it's obviously held them back. You know, they've never been diagnosed, or they were self-diagnosed later in life. So all of these challenges, right, kind of create a situation where, you know, if they don't feel like they're a team member, there's no way to succeed. And both sides are investing a lot in the relationship. So, you know, where it becomes a challenge is if how much you're willing to share. And some of the stuff gets very personal. And, you know, and we only ask to the point of where they're comfortable sharing. And that is kind of that bright line, but you don't know where it is until maybe you cross over and we provide the help. You know, we know, even though everyone is treated equally, everyone understands that we're not treated equally because some people need more help in certain areas. And some people don't. You know, some might be loners and they're just fine. Others want to be highly engaged with what we're doing and having conversations every day, you know, pre-trip, during the trip, post-trip. So, you know, our team accommodates that. And we get to know the drivers really well. We have so many great stories of people, drivers in particular, coming back who's like, you know, you saved me. We thank you. And, you know, we do a lot of recognition around, you know, I always say driver appreciation, which happens in September. it's not a week. It's every day. Because without them, nothing moves. People don't appreciate drivers until something doesn't show up.
That's such the joke. We always joke about driver appreciation week is when the office people get the barbecue and they're like, you know, oh, yeah. It's like, oh yeah, we're doing a barbecue. Anyone who can swing through the terminal, you know, do it. Meanwhile, right, you're like, you know, 2,000 miles away. Like, oh, thanks for the appreciation, guys.
Yeah.
I did want to add. So my this podcast is about what I call applied neurodivergence, and you kind of touched on it when you know, people come in and whether or not what they decide to disclose or not being a personal decision, and once that disclosure happens, it's you know, then you can start to look into accommodations. You know, for example, you know, someone in sales or even a driver with dyslexia, even mixing up a couple numbers, you know, on routine paperwork. Yeah, that could be, you know, it's an easy fix. When it comes to something like load weight, though, when they mix it up and suddenly they're over, you know, they got overloaded by, you know, a couple thousand pounds and they didn't see it on the, you know, scale, you know, when they scaled out. Then they're getting pulled in and they're overweight and, whatever smoky out there is like, no, you're done, you know, shut down. And then it's a problem, especially with a, you know, high touch load or something. So that's where it could be like a serious consequence. But I want to back up and say, you know, that comes, you know, when you're looking at it from a accommodation standpoint. Applied neurodivergence is the leverage of neurodivergent traits, looking at the cognition as an asset rather than a liability. And it's something I feel is missing from the general conversation about neurodivergence in the workplace. You know, because for example, like logistics, from the outside, it looks just like numbers, looks like trucks, you know, getting something from point A to point B. But from the inside, it's about pattern recognition. So I want to ask you, like, how much of what makes a great dispatcher, you know, planner, driver, actually comes down to seeing patterns that other people can't see?
Yeah, I have an interesting story and it's still playing out. So an individual that oversees our regulated fleet, and he manages a lot of it's dedicated business, not necessarily dedicated lanes for Ford Motor Company. And I had no idea that he had ADHD until we started having conversations, and he was bringing things to my attention that no one else was bringing up. And I said, hey, that's really interesting. You know, I want you to work with our, we have a data analyst that prepares reports and things like that and make sure that the data is cleansed. And I quickly realized that he was running circles around the data analyst. And I was like, how are you doing this? And he's like, well, I have great ideas. And then I'm using AI in various forms. So whether it's Claude, ChatGPT, and Perplexity and others to kind of suss out the thesis that I'm coming up with. And I got a much deeper appreciation with how his mind works. He does not come across as a very analytical guy, but he's now the leading quantitative person in our company. And you would have never guessed it. So he's coming up on his 1 year anniversary, and what he's bringing to the table, our trucking group has never seen. So he's so far ahead of the operators that he's now taking on all the analytics in the company because he knows the business and just the way his mind is wired. So it's been phenomenal.
I absolutely love that. I published an article on LinkedIn in January about the natural symbiosis between artificial intelligence and neurodivergence, mainly because both minds use what's called bottom-up processing, which is taking granular data and building it up to a full picture. Meanwhile, neurotypicals will approach AI and treat it like a search engine or something. They don't give it enough granular data, and the AI wants to help. So it'll fill in the blanks. And when those blanks don't fit what the neurotypical wanted, they, blame the AI. They're like, oh, it's hallucinating. It's like, no, you didn't give it much to work with. But AI in the hands of a very intelligent neurodivergent person can work some, work some pretty amazing results. And it sounds like you guys are on the receiving end of that, which I love hearing about that. I love hearing about any of our neurodivergent brothers and sisters who are able to succeed in the workplace and even, outperform expectations. So this loving this story, Jim. Thank you.
And this gentleman who I have a meeting with this afternoon, actually, regarding fuel and the fuels, how is fuel impacting our gross profit dollars, even though it's a pass-through. It may be influencing the way we price things. So we're texting back and forth this weekend, and he's like, oh, yeah. It's like, I know exactly, and I want to show it. Look, if any person in the office would have said that, it probably would have been weeks or months, and his brain is already there. So he's been a great addition to the team. He's won Employee of the Month numerous times, and he's become a superstar in the company.
I absolutely love that. Well, I wanted to, let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about ADHD specifically. Okay, so ADHD is, it comes along with hypervigilance. And this is a trait that gets generally pathologized in offices. It's, I want to say like static environments, like an office, for example. It's not a very good trait because unless an ADHD mind is, properly stimulated, it's going to, it's going to overflow. It's not a good, a bored ADHD person is not someone who generally plays well with others. Yet in a cab or on the road, it's a survival advantage. You're constantly scanning threat assessment, multi-input attention. Let me ask you, where do you see that showing up in your best people?
Yeah, well, so we implemented, I'm sure you're familiar with Samsara. So we have Samsara in all of our trucks. So we have inward-facing, outward-facing cameras. AI is constantly reviewing every image, both sides. And this isn't something that we see unless there's an incident. So in other words, we're not looking at live streams, but it's recording them. And then if there's an incident, we can go back, you know, whether it's as simple as a deer running across the road or someone hard braking in front of them. But then there's the in-cab side. And the in-cab is distracted driving. It's all the things you would imagine. And when we implemented that, I mean, it's probably going on a year and a half now in all of our trucks. Certain people were glommed onto it much quicker, but their scores were already super high. And this gets back to your point, James, is they can take in a lot of information and kind of categorize it, you know, prioritize it, and make really good decisions in real time. Whereas other people, they don't have the reaction time because they don't have the mental capacity to take in 100 factors simultaneously. So that was one of the interesting parts is, you know, we do have one of our drivers has ADHD, and his safety scores were always great. And we just thought it was like, oh, well, we trained him really well. But what we found is his mind thinks differently.
Right, and predictive risk management.
That's right. And we actually, so the best safety scores each month, we actually, they get an incentive. And it's always the same guy. So now we have a second and third because, yeah, they can just digest and analyze a lot of different information, do the risk assessment, and make the right decisions. Because, you know, people don't understand, it's like, okay, you drive to and from work, you know, but you're not carrying a 50,000-pound load down an interstate for 12 hours, whether it's light, dark, doesn't matter what. You know, you're, what you observe and what you think about are completely different than just driving down the highway.
It's you bring up a really good point. It's because it is a lot of driving, a lot of hours on the road, and the average person doesn't drive that much. I mean, if you think about it, even their, you know, someone who's been driving their entire life, still, you know, maybe 20-minute drive back and forth to work. They do errands on weekends. Maybe they'll do a road trip or two. But overall, the average trucker does more driving in a week than most people do in, you know, months. And it's, you know, so when you're on the road all the time, you see a lot of different things. And this is, you know, I can attest to this personally, is all about the pattern recognition. I could tell when someone's, you know, texting on their phone because I could see them up ahead, up ahead swerving a little bit. I could tell when someone is pulling up to a, you know, stop sign, they're going to do a rolling stop and pull in front of me. Because no one, it doesn't matter who it is. No one wants to get stuck behind a truck, right? So even, and you see it all the time in the right-hand lane, just cruising, and someone will speed up on an on-ramp. You know, they want to get ahead of you. No one wants to get stuck behind. But it's after seeing these patterns after some time, it really, you know, you start to be able to predict it ahead of time. So it doesn't surprise me that, you know, your ADHD driver has high safety scores. So it's interesting that he was, you know, it's interesting that he can do that. Let me ask you this. If you see the ADHD guy who's able to do all these things, how do you train the rest of your drivers in that, you know, what comes to the neurodivergent employee naturally, that is like predictive risk management on the road? How do you pass that on?
Yeah, so we do a few things. We do coaching. We do regular sessions. We do communications. Unfortunately, a lot of it is managed by exception, right? So those that tend to get challenged, and those are usually our younger drivers, you know, where you can see their scores improving, but probably not as quickly as they could. So we do share best practices. Our drivers, we do group chats, but our drivers don't tend to communicate all that much. And it's not that they don't want to share best practices. That's just not kind of who they are. But it takes, I think if you look at the profile of drivers, it takes a unique individual. And, it, you know, I think in our industry in general, we're a little different. We're unique. It's not that we are weird or strange or anything like that. But what gets us excited is not what would get most people excited. But I think sharing best practices. So we do have, of course, safety training and modules, orientation, all that things, but it's the ongoing coaching. Now with Samsara, they do get in-cab alerts. So, you know, there's behavioral modification going on as they're rolling down the highway, not in a distracting way, we're also looking at the analytics on the other side and identifying opportunities for improvement. So it's ongoing, you know, past original training, orientation, then it's just ongoing. And, you know, those that are, you know, struggling are the ones that usually get the attention.
Right. I mean, I drove for a couple of carriers that had the inward facing cameras. And, you know, I would sometimes get a phone call from safety, you know, because of a hard break, and like we discussed before the episode, trucking is one of those few professions that you can do everything right and still die, because you can. And it's just, you can't predict everything that's, you know, if you have a, right. If you're just going along and you have a steer tire blowout and you're in, you know, that can, it's, you know, it's a catastrophe. And you have no control over that. There might be debris in the road. There could be anything that, you know, anything could happen. And when it comes to some of these things like hard braking, it's, no one wants to get stuck behind a truck, right? So someone will come over and, you know, cut someone off really quickly. And then you hit it, and then you're dealing with, and I know that there's a threshold with braking, where it will, you know, trip something off, and then your safety officer gets an alert. And then they're reviewing the footage. And, you know, to try to see what happens. And that kind of has, you know, even like a, someone cutting off a truck can have second tier consequences. You know, for example, if the brake is hard enough for a load shift, and you won't even know until they get to the receiver and they pop the, you know, they pop the trailer and they see like everything's jacked up. And then they're, you know, then everyone's, you know, you're sending pictures and everything's all the way up and down. You're involving OS&D. You have all these, you know, it's a lot more moving parts. All that came from someone who, you know, did a cutoff. So it can have, you know, some serious, you know, second, third tier consequences that could come from something minor on the road. So that's the kind of thing that I want to dive into a little bit is where are you with your drivers as far as being able to recognize that, you know, to be able to recognize the problem before the problem manifests?
Yeah. So one of the things we do, and by the way, you know, 90% of what are classified as safety infractions are not the driver's fault. So if you look at, you know, our safety scores are in the high 90s, but as you parse out those individual incidents, it's usually something or someone else that incurred that safety infraction. It wasn't the driver. But you need to look at each one, right, independently.
Right.
And have a discussion. And there's usually, you know, we detect everything. You know, it's funny. You know, one of the things is like eating. You know, we always say is like, look, you're going to get triggered or yawning, right? It's like there are certain activities that AI will flag that are not even within the scope. Now, you want to make sure hands-free, you know, on the phone, right? There are certain things that we can accommodate. But again, that kind of falls back into the bucket of what's real and what isn't. What is the who's, and this isn't a blame game. This is just us continuous improvement. So, you know, we keep our eye on, and the way our dispatchers work, you know, we have, they have their own group of drivers that they work with. So, you know, you learn, you build a personal relationship, you know, provide, you know, custom training. So it's not like you're getting a different person every time. It's someone that you know and love,
right.
And, you know, it's trust. So those relationships make those discussions very easy.
I feel like dispatching they're going to make or break it. I mean, honestly, because you touched on it earlier in the episode that there is a lot of turnover in this industry. And that's because there is a demand for safe drivers. And honestly, once a driver has like, you know, 2-3 years of safe driving, and it all comes down to that MVR, it literally is dealer's choice. I still, you know, I haven't been on the road for over a year and a half, over a year now. And I still get calls from recruiters still calling me up. And it's just, and every driver you have, if they've ever been on, you know, if they've ever been, you know, out there looking for work, that information goes out. So they're always having recruiters calling. And it's funny because they always want to, you know, they paint it like the grass is always greener, and it's not. You know, I've jumped around enough to know that it's not, but it's still good to know that the options are there. So it's great that you have this this relationship between the dispatchers and the drivers, because that's like their main interface. Like most of the time, the you know, unless it's something like a safety incident or a maintenance issue, the dispatcher is going to be any driver's main point of contact with the company, like all the time. So I think that's, you know, that's awesome that you're doing that. So Jim, I wanted to shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit about your Dolby experience.
Yes.
As far as disability ownership. Last week, I interviewed, Cammie was on here.
Because
I was at the, I was at the Slowdown Summit down in Columbus a few weeks ago. It was, I was the only neurodivergent entrepreneur who was Dolby certified. A lot of them had never heard of it. And I found myself like explaining, what it was. So I got a hold of Cammie, right? I'm like, hey, can you mind coming on the show and sharing, about what Dolby is? And it was a fantastic episode. And then that just happened to follow, you know, be, you know, the precursor to you coming on. So I'd love to hear a little bit about Dolby experience. You know, and Dolby certification, it's still relatively new. It's a relatively new piece of the supplier diversity conversation. So could you walk us through right quick your path up to it and what it has meant for Revolution?
Yeah. So, you know, first of all, Cammie's fantastic. And she's always since day one. So I think, it was right when I started Revolution. It was in 2019. And as I was working with, I had kidney failure, of course. And so started searching organizations, and they had been around for a little bit, but so I wanted to learn more and what it meant. And you're right. Even today, there is an awareness problem, and it's no fault of DOBE. It's just, and there's not necessarily, it's not wide enough kind of known. It's not like disabled veterans or, right, there's certain categories that are obvious. But here's where it all starts, is if the companies are, if the potential clients, right, of why would you get your certification? Well, there's set-asides and you'd like to work with those companies. But do they mean it, or is it just lip service and an exercise? I always, right after the certification, went to the annual conference, which is coming up in July, which are terrific. But, you know, I found out over time, you know, are they serious or not? And one of the first questions I would ask them is, you know, tell me your last onboarding of a DOBE service provider or company. And that always kind of stops them in their tracks, because, you know, they always view the relationship as they're doing us a favor. And I've always espoused, and there is a right place for us. And you will be shocked. We will outperform the incumbents, and we will surprise you. And some of them fully embrace it. Like we've had instances with some very large companies. You know, Union Pacific, the railroad, is one of the first that came to mind. And it's not that we're moving freight with them, but I'm telling you, from the first time we met, discussed what we did, they said, great, we're going to get you signed up as a diverse supplier. And we started doing business within 1 week. Now, that's not the norm, but usually it's a bit of a backwater. Then there's a couple different factors that really affect it. One is there's a ton of turnover at big companies when it becomes the diverse supplier discussion. And usually it's in procurement somewhere, and they kind of rotate people through. So there's no continuity. Two, it's not demand-driven, which it should be. It's like, hey, here are specific opportunities and projects, and then let's go find a match in the marketplace. But it doesn't start that way. It doesn't start from the demand side. It starts from, hi, how are you doing? Hey, log into our portal, write your information. You'll never hear from us again.
Right.
Okay, that's usually where it goes.
I love how direct... I love how direct you were. That's such a, I think that states your logistics background, because it is like logistics and trucking in general, out of all of the industries in America right now, I would say it is the most merit-based.
That's right.
It is the most merit-based. And that's such a merit-coded question to ask, is walk me through what your last onboarding looked like. Because it does put puts the pressure directly on them. And it's funny, because I feel like a lot of in this space, you know, I obviously have a, I started Pathways Collective. It's a startup, a consulting startup, and moving into this space with that sense of not only logistics directness, but neurodivergent directness too, because it's something that we're, you know, with autism, we're very much want to get to the meat of the issue right away. It's not always well received. So I think that's fantastic that you do that, because right away it makes them, you know, it's, I've always been a believer that if you ask someone a yes or no question, and if the first word of the, out of their mouth is, well, instead of answering yes or no, then usually we're in, you know, usually we're in store for some bull stuff. So I think that's really, you know, it's fantastic that you are asking that. But I do want to ask you this. When a buyer or supplier diversity team, when they learn that a revolution is Adobe, what's the reaction you typically get? And what do you wish that they would understand that they don't?
Yeah, so no, that's great. So once you get through the smokescreen of, log into our portal, sign up, put all your information there, the next one's usually, will you ever hear from that person again? Because I totally get they're busy and they go to, I mean, some of these larger companies, they're at a different event every week. In a different city, in a different, so right then they're, I'm sure their inbox is a mess. What we push for is, hey, look, we understand you're an influencer and not a decision maker. So just tell us who the right people are to talk to. The problem is, James, is that that's so disconnected. And this is why I always say it's like, it's got to be demand driven. If you're just like, we don't want to dress up and play house. Like, it's either real or it isn't. But James, you spend so much energy because you see these logos, you see these big companies that you want to give it all your effort and you want to be successful. But the problem is they don't value our time. And because they think they're doing us a favor, they don't know how many hundreds of hours. Like, you talk about being busy. This is a commitment. And I would say 1 out of 20, so 5%. Of the DOB, the companies that are interested in working with us, end up actually happening. And part of the reason is because once that handoff happens and you're talking to the right person, whether they're on the traffic manager, the logistics people, or whoever it might be, they're like, yeah, we don't know. Now, where there is real value is the people that get it tend to be working for the federal government in one shape or form, and they know that it is an absolute requirement. One of the spaces we've had a lot of success is in construction, right? Because the government is involved with that, the local, state, federal, those people tend to get it, and they see it as a competitive advantage, because if they find the right one, they know that that partner will help them win business. So we've seen that happen, where our credentials add value to their proposal. And because of that, we're part of the team versus kind of the, I hate the quote of the redheaded stepchild. It's like, yes, again, about them. They're off in a corner somewhere. It's not important. And hopefully they just go away and move on to the next thing. So, you know, there's a lot of companies that talk a really good game and don't follow up on it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's something Cammie and I touched on last week about, you know, as a new startup, you get used to being told no. And as a, you know, someone with neurodivergence outside of the normal, you know, rejection sensitivity, which comes along with being, you know, ND, if it's a no, just say that, you know, don't kick the can down the road. And it's again, kind of circles back to not being able to get a straight answer from anyone. And I suspect it's because no one wants to take responsibility for it. Like, if they give you a straight answer, then they're responsible for that answer, versus, you know, the smoke screen or the, you know, the we'll see, or, you know, sign up and, you know, go into our hiring pipeline or our vendor pipeline, and we'll get back to you if something comes up. It's really, you know, it is, you know, you're right, it is a smoke screen. And it can be a waste of time because you're, you know, you put in tons of hours. I mean, I look at some of the, even on the disability in vendor portal, there's all the, you know, all the companies, and it'll give you right onto the diversity inclusion, you know, the sign up. And it's a substantial amount of information that you have to fill out. It takes at least, you know, at least an hour. to get it all done. And then you multiply that by the hundreds of companies that are on there, and you're looking at a, you know, huge thing. So it's, so it does take a time investment. And I think that you're right, that it is a, you know, because to them, they have hundreds and, you know, sometimes even thousands of vendors that are coming to them. And, you know, the supply outweighs the demand where they're from.
James, we have never, again, we started in 2019. We've never been contacted purely off a portal where someone did a search on the portal and found us. I sometimes think that it's complete smoke and mirrors. I don't know who's using that. Now, the alternative is when we get introduced to the right people, we have a high probability of success. It might not be immediate, but you know, we get contacted, you know, 2 years down the road, it was like, hey, we got this. And so if it's human to human, we see a high degree of success. If it's like set it and forget it, we've never had anything right. come of that.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, because the you know, any of our listeners that might be considering getting Adobe certification, you know, when they hear about the portal thing being a, you know, waste of time, but at the same time, one of the greatest aspects of Disability IN and the Adobe program is those warm introductions, where they can put you in a face-to-face meeting. And that's where, you know, I'm really glad that you brought that up, Jim, because it's really, you know, I feel, you know, it's hopeful. It's helpful.
James, you know, and so, you know, it's like people are probably thinking it is like, well, why do you still do it if there hasn't been success? Because the access you get to real people and high people in organizations, you will never get. So you look at the Fortune 500 companies that we've been introduced to through DOB, and it, you can't replicate that. The other thing is, you know, they use those lists. Like you don't know where your company's name is ending up. I can tell you that the first one we got was through Toyota. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting. I've never reached out to Toyota. And they invited me to an event. Okay. That would never happen unless they had that list of people. So just that pathway, that connectivity between organizations, you just, it's worth so much, because even if it doesn't end in business immediately, those relationships are highly valuable.
All right, Jim, we're just about, we're getting to the end of the episode. Just to wrap up, I want to ask you, what's one thing that you want drivers to know, not necessarily with Revolution Trucking, but any of our mm-hmm. listeners who, you know, might be CDL drivers or might even be considering getting a CDL and entering the trucking industry? What's one thing that you would want them to know?
Yeah, I would say, you know, choose wisely. One of the problems in our industry is, like you started the conversation with, they all look the same. They all say the same things. It's really hard to differentiate them. And so then it's just word of mouth through other drivers, which is hugely important. And there's great networks of drivers, you know, sharing information. Choose wisely and get to know the people. I always start with the executives, right? The higher you can go in the organization, you know, that is the representation of what is happening below them. And, you know, one of the first things I do, every new driver, I give them my business card and I go, if you're not getting things taken care of, I want you to call me, and my cell phone right there. So, you know, I want to ensure we're delivering on our value proposition. And, but if someone is just dangling more money and this and that and the other thing, you got to look at the culture. Who are these people? Do I trust them? And make the decision that way. Now, I will say, yeah, just the industry in general, you know, yes, the driver shortage has always existed, but I think the real problem is pay. You know, now, you know, we have been getting a lot of the bad actors out of the system, people that should not be on the road. That's good, because that allows to raise rates, but that has to trickle down to the driver as well. So we have a number of different plans to ensure that the driver is getting their fair pay.
I love that. And you're right, with drivers, we talk. I mean, obviously it's during my career, I worked for 9 different trucking companies. And it was, some of them were pretty, you know, pretty good. Some of them was only a few weeks because it was, you know, they misrepresent, you know, the map doesn't always, the map doesn't always match the territory. And the recruiters will tell you whatever they can to get your butt in that seat. And they put on the dog and pony show for orientation. And then you get out there and you're like, oh man, here we go. It's, you know, it's wild. And they try to squeeze everything they can, especially these larger carriers. One thing, most of my career, I drove reefer. Because it was, I liked reefer, because it's like, you get a little bit of downtime. The few times when I drove dry van, for example, everything is drop and hook now. So you don't get any downtime. It's literally just, you're in and out of a yard in, you know, in and out of a yard in 15 minutes, picking up, you know, dropping off a load and picking up another one. And it is a, at least with reefer, I'd pull into a DC somewhere and I know it's going to take at least 3 or 4 hours to get unloaded. And that's time I could just, you know, chill out or do, if it's enough time, I could do a split. You know, you have a lot more leeway with it.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, but we do talk, you know, we do talk amongst each other. We know who's good carriers and who's not. And a big one is that signing bonus too. Like, I can't tell you how many, I just had a conversation with someone in the lane next to me at, like, you know, Loves while we're fueling up. And he's like, yeah, my company's great here. And he gives me a number. He goes, listen, call the recruiter, tell them, you know, Georgie sent you. And they have a pretty good driver referral bonus too. So if I go on there, sign on, and one guy I did specifically, he ended up with a $5,000 bonus because I ended up going over there and it was really, you know, so it's because they want their drivers to be ambassadors for the company on the road, which is fantastic. So let me ask you this. What's one thing that you would want shippers and even receivers and just general supply chain leaders to know?
Yeah, so I think we all, well, this is actually a problem that is growing and is only going to get worse. The people making the decisions for every given shipment, for any given shipment, are not actually in it. Well, a lot of times, as a transportation provider, we know more than they do. So they need to be open to what we like to think were boots on the ground. And rather than it's this way or my way or the highway, no pun intended, is that it needs to be collaborative. We see things and know things that they don't know. A lot of the people that are ultimately saying go, they're not at the shipper location. They don't know what's going on. You know, one thing, 2/3 of the information we get is good. And then 1/3 is either bad or missing. So, you know, we close that gap. So we do a lot of the work, you know, on their behalf. Now we know we're getting paid. And so when you're getting paid by them, you got to do some things because you can't get frustrated and go, they should do this. Well, if they were going to do everything, then they wouldn't need us. But, you know, knowing that it's, there's more data than they're aware of. You know, I always say the iceberg of ignorance, right? Where they operate is above the waterline, but they're not as familiar in what's going on below the surface.
Right. It's, it's one thing that's a lot of them are out of touch. Right. And, you know, I noticed this a lot with the, like tracking. Okay. Like sometimes I would, you know, I'd be picking up a load, and it would, you know, someone from the office would call and say, hey, listen, the broker wants you to download this tracking software onto your phone to track the load. I'm like, okay, awesome. So I would do it. And, you know, I'd be doing whatever. And then I would get a phone call from the same brokerage. They're like, well, what's your ETA? And I'm like, you guys are tracking me. They're like, oh, well, that's for the customer. We don't have access to that. I'm like, why would you have me? You know, it's so wild. And then the other one is no one seems to talk to each other, where I would get multiple phone calls from the same brokerage asking for an ETA within minutes of each other. And I'm like, dude, I just talked to your guy. You know, it's going to get there. And then it really, you know, I feel that it's important for brokers, especially, to realize that we have strict timelines and strict hours of service. So like, if you want to split hairs, when I'm on a 10-hour break or any driver's on their break and that phone rings and it's work related, you're supposed to go on duty for it. And that resets a 10-hour clock. As a courtesy, many drivers don't do that. I wish that they would, to kind of, you know, advocate a little bit better for themselves and realize that it's, you know, because it is an issue. Technically, you're not supposed to do a freaking thing. You don't do a thing. You know, another one is like, truckers can't moonlight on, you know, if they're home for like a few days, they can't, you know, even for a 34-hour reset, they can't drive Uber or anything because that counts as work. That counts as on duty. So the DOT is very, very strict on what is on duty and what's off. So when a driver's phone rings and interrupts their sleep, that can also have, you know, safety issues down the road if they get, you know, end up tired. So I think that it's important for, you know, brokerages or anyone to really understand what's going on in the cab.
That's so important is an appreciation just of hours of service, but even beyond that, of what is going on. Like, those are the guardrails, sure, but what is going on? And we always protect the driver and ultimately ourselves, because the liability today associated with something going wrong is way too high. It's way too high. So that shipment being late, which, by the way, James, a lot of it is fictitious anyway. They go, it's got to be here by this time.
Oh, believe
then we check in with the consignee, and it's like, what are you talking about? We don't need so a lot of bad information.
It's why I want to have a conversation with a guy in the warehouse, because I can't tell you how many times I've picked up something. It's a hot load. You got to get it there by Wednesday at 5. And I get there and they're like, we're going to, you know, I had one in Baltimore where I busted my ass to get it there. And it was on time. And they're like, yeah, we can't upload this to the morning. And then I'm stuck in, like, you know, Baltimore Harbor trying to find a place to park because that's why I want to talk to the guys actually in the warehouse, because I don't know what kind of BS is, you know, being added to it. Okay. So let me ask you this. What's one thing that you would want another disability owned founder to know?
So it is absolutely 100% all about your network, right? So build out, spend the energy to get to know and build out your network. When I started Revolution, one of the things I realized as I was going through my Rolodex, a third of my contacts had retired. A third had gone out of industry. They were in something completely different. And a third had been promoted up, but were probably with a different company. So, you know, there's a shelf life on your network. So, you know, maintain that. The opportunities will come. You know, if you just go, hey, I'm here, I'm a diverse supplier, where's the business? You're not going to be successful. Plus the amount of turnover that's going on, keeping track of those people, where they go. We've had huge success. So real interesting fact, James, I look back all the way to our first shipment, 50% of our revenues were associated with pre-existing relationships, people we knew before we even started the company. 45% were referrals from those people. And then the other 5% were people over the transom and random people we didn't know. So that shows you how powerful the network is, and just continue building it out.
Absolutely. Okay. Jim, I want to thank you for being on the show. This has been awesome. I love, you know, I've been out of trucking for a while. I have a couple of my buddies I still talk to occasionally, but it's really great to kind of talk shop a little bit. I do. A part of me misses it, you know, misses being on the road. In some ways it was the best job ever. In others, it's, you know, it's wild how you're, you know, out there stressed out, yet I would get home and I couldn't wait to get back out again, you know? So it was great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's great to, you know, connect with a fellow Dobie. I love what Revolution Trucking is doing for, you know, neurodivergence in the workplace. I think that's awesome that you celebrate it. And it's, you know, something that I would like to see a lot more of, you know, with our neurodivergent cognition being recognizing for the asset that it is, you know, being recognized and being celebrated. It's, you know, that's fantastic. So lastly, well, where can people find you, you know, Revolution, any work or partners you want to point listeners towards, any, you know, save shots?
Yeah. So, you know, go to our website. There's a lot of different avenues to connect with us. So it's www.revolutiontrucking.com. And you can click the button, get started. And our response time is a few minutes. So yeah, get going.
Okay. And I'll drop everything in the show notes, as far as the website and everything. Okay. So Jim, thank you so much again for coming on the show. This is fantastic. Thank you again, sir.
James, pleasure.
All right, everyone. That's a wrap for this week. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to another episode of The Site Side.